Hey, this is Christian.
Hey, this is Damon.
And this is The Amazing Nerd Show.
We're a podcast that takes a deep dive into nerd culture. Every episode, we will talk comics, movies, video games, and even wrestling.
You can find us on iTunes, you can find us on Podbean. The Amazing Nerd Show, the show you never knew you wanted.
Master, your loyal servants greet you.
Master, your warriors await your command.
Know that each of you who serves me well shall one day rule a nation and command an army such as the world has never seen. All this will be so when I summon Kalgara. And now, my first command, the most important, find the two who are one.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I'm your host, Jason Bishop, and with me today is Sam Stepanenko.
I brought my sword. I am going to hack this movie to bits.
I can't wait. And you know what? This is actually WrestleMania weekend we're recording this on. In fact, today's WrestleMania day, so by the time you're hearing it, the last match should be on. Pretty sure half the audience will have died from malnutrition, and the other ones that have survived on concession have developed type 2 diabetes. Wolves have run off with the children. That's how fucking long this thing is. I'm so glad we're recording this instead of watching WrestleMania.
I haven't watched a WrestleMania since probably WrestleMania 5.
Fuck you, old.
Yeah, I am. But, yeah, you know, it stopped being charming for me right about the Generation X era.
Right.
It went from being sort of fun, you know it's fake, but fun entertainment, to Mexican drama, Mexican telenovelas. It started to feel like that. It just so much drama and so little wrestling. I'm like, fuck this, I'm done.
Yeah, I don't know. I've had mixed feelings about that era as well. And then any time I've tried to dive in since, it's like, oof, this is bad stuff.
Yeah, it's become more about the characters and less about the entertainment.
Yeah.
Because wrestling, I mean, the athleticism of even entertainment wrestling is so astounding. And then they stop doing it.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean,
or they just reduce the amount they were doing.
It's funny, the guys who are in their farm league, the NXT guys, those pay-per-views are stellar because it's all about the performance over there. And then they get elevated to the main roster, and then old man McMahon, who's had finished picking the pockets of the dead people in the audience,
yeah,
he doesn't know how to book that type of talent because he's just old.
I think he's lost sight of what made it popular in its inception, right?
Yeah, and just the sheer amazing matches that are going on in the NXT takeovers that happen. I actually did watch it last night, and whew, that's some good wrestling. Yeah. No. that's the kind of wrestling that wins me back, but those only happen every 4 months.
It's been a while since I've gone back to look at wrestling, so I might one day.
I thought I'd mention that just because I wanted to get in the, it is going to be 7 hours.
This movie felt that long?
Yeah. At only 83 minutes, it felt like 3 days.
Yes. And yeah, so that doesn't even meet feature length criteria, does it? In the 80s?
I think it's still 90 minutes. So yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was the advent of direct-to-video, and that actually played havoc with the budget on this movie. We are talking Sorceress, by the way, from 1982.
And this is
a Roger Corman production.
This is after, just after Easter, so, and this is a bit of an Easter egg movie for us.
Yes, this is. If you guys tuned into our cult movie A-Go-Go back on January 1 this year, that was our New Year's gift to you, was this smorgasbord of insane trailers. And, you know, even we get taken by some of the stuff we do. So we were like, hey, we need to check that out because it's got floating heads and gratuitous 80s nudity and all sorts of weirdness. That is one wacky ass trailer. We had to go do it, to my eternal regret.
Yeah, that's an hour and 22 minutes I'm never getting back.
This might be the second worst movie we've ever done.
It's on par. It is absolutely on par. It was as insane as Hard Rock Zombies.
Yeah, almost.
Almost. This one had a slightly more coherent story, and I'm only going slightly.
Yeah. It felt like a bunch of scenes put together. The original cut in this movie, by the way, is like over two hours. So
it might have made more sense.
It might have made more sense then.
Yeah,
I doubt it though, because apparently the script was written in a week,
and it felt like it was made in a week.
Yeah, this was initially promised to have something that looked a bit bigger budget, but Corman was all worried about direct video eating into drive-in sales, because that's kind of where his milieu lie. Yeah. So he hacked this thing to pieces and did it to the bare minimum. They did all this scouting of regions around the world, and then Corman comes in, oh, you're shooting in Mexico, that's where he got the best deal, right?
Yeah. I mean, and you know, the setting is probably the best part of the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
The backdrops and even the castle sets and stuff like that, although they reused a lot of it.
Oh, there's a lot of reusing on here. I had to roll my eyes when the opening dramatic music pops up, and I'm like, this is the James Horner music from from Beyond the Stars. Like, which I guess is something Corman used a lot.
Yes, he did. Yeah, actually, I'm going to name a drop of another podcast, and we name dropped him last week too, but Sean and I actually talked about that a few months ago.
Okay.
About Corman reusing Horner's music.
Yes. I don't think we've ever come across it as of yet until now.
Yeah. Actually, this is the second time.
Is it the second time?
This is the second time, because that's what instigated the conversation I had with Sean from What Does It Matter. Is he's like, that music's the music from Battle Beyond the Stars. He'll have to tell me which movie that was. I don't remember, but he was the one who brought that to my attention.
Okay, I mean, it's certainly not our first Corman movie.
This is not by a long shot.
We've done quite a few at this point.
Well, because he has so much stuff that's remakeable.
Yeah. Now, he produced this movie, but this movie was actually directed by Jack Hill under a pseudonym of Brian Stewart, because he wanted to take his name off this piece of shit.
Yes.
Initially, he wanted to make a Grindr movie to kind of elevate him and hopefully reinvigorate his career. In the end, this wound up ending his working relationship with Roger Corman.
It ended up wrecking his entire working relationship. This was the last film he ever directed.
This was, yes. Yeah. That's unfortunate. But he's directed things like more grindhouse classics and cult classics, like The Terror, Foxy Brown, The Big Birdcage, Wasp Women. Like, I can't say they're classic, but
they're well known.
They're well known.
Spider Baby, which we've talked about on the show briefly a few times.
Yeah, so he has done these memorable kind of grindhouse and yeah, I guess I can call them cult films.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, so they're things that have kind of stood up to the test of time, so it's a shame this one just destroyed him. The writer, he actually wrote the script as well, but the sole writing credit went to Jim Wynarski, which was probably a good thing. I think this was actually his first film that he wrote. And then he went on to write Mockbusters. You know what those are?
Yes.
And, well, let me just read a few of his classics here. House 4, Beastmaster 2, The Chopping Mall, Gargoyle's Revenge, Dino Croc versus Super Gator. And then we get on to some really juicy stuff. The Hills Have Thighs, The Da Vinci Coed, and The Bear Wench Project. So
he moved into porn.
He he started writing porn. I didn't know porn had scripts.
I thought most they might have had, like, this is what we're going to do. Go with it, right? No dialogue. Yeah.
But this does explain a lot of why this movie is the way it is.
It does. It does. We know where his heart was lying, even that back then.
Boobies.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, shopping mall is probably
this could have easily been a porno.
easily. And you know, he was pushing the limits. There's a couple one-liners in there that are quite suggestive.
Yeah, there definitely are. When the twins are swimming and the satyr Pando shows up, and they're like, "What's that thing between his legs?
Is that a horn?
Is that a horn? Is that a weapon? We should attack it."
Yes.
Yeah. So. That's a whole other thing all by itself. We will get into the ridiculous gender identity stuff in this movie,
yes.
Which we might be able to play with as well. But, oh my God.
There's some really sketchy stuff in this movie. Most of it has to go because it is definitely not...
Oh, yeah.
Not topical now or acceptable now, to be honest.
No, this movie... does not age well, especially in this political PC climate that we're in right now.
No, it most certainly
doesn't. Every chick in this movie gets naked at some point or another, or shows their breasts, or most of it.
Yeah. There's.
I think the princess got lucky by showing the least. But
yeah, and I mean, it was sort of like translucent clothing kind of thing.
She's,
but
like every, even the extras.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, this was an exploitation film at its worst.
Yes.
In so many ways.
Yeah. And then there's so much, when I went through this cast, it's funny cuz like there's a lot of Mexican talent in this movie and they're all looped, they're all overdubbed badly because they didn't get voice actors, they just got, "Hey, grip guy."
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the
"Hey, catering, come over here and do this." Like, it is the worst, flattest performances I've ever seen.
It was really agonizing. And we talked about it before we started the show, but I started watching it on one streaming service. And it was so badly out of sync, the way it looked. And then combined with the audio that was out of sync and the bad acting, I'm like, I can't watch it on this. I just can't. I can't do it.
Yeah.
Right? But fortunately, it's available on another streaming service that wasn't working for me but did start working for me. And I was like, yay, I get to watch this piece of crap. At least I get to watch it with the audio in sync.
Yes. Yeah, you can find this movie on Tubi, and you can find it on Amazon Prime right now as well. So if you've got those services... don't bother. There's way better things to watch on both of them.
I would say that this movie would be a lot of fun with a group of people where you can Mystery Science Theater it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? That's the only way that you should ever watch this movie is if you can sit there and hack on it as a group.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because the best part of the movie was when my wife came down and went, "What the fuck are you watching?" And she watched about 3 minutes and she's like, "Have fun." That's all she could say because it was just nuts.
Speaking of, we got something in the works with your wife now because I love how she'll say stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we've got a little segment brewing that I haven't got a title for it yet, for her segment yet, for Val's segment, but I don't know. The V card? Oh. She'd love that.
She probably would, yes. Yeah, I like it when she just goes uncensored. You've heard my wife on here before, and my wife does not have an edit button. Just for the record,
no,
she does not.
No, that's why we were out yesterday meeting with some other podcasters, and I came up with this great idea of like, we should just let her go for like 1 minute. It'll be insanely and hilarious.
Yeah, there's no pulling punches, and she speaks the truth as she sees it.
As she sees it, yes. So look forward to tentatively titled V card coming soon to Invasion of the Remake.
Yes. Yes, and she's actually quite excited about it. Good. Nervous, but excited.
I can't wait to listen to what those sound like.
Keeping her under a minute is going to be hard.
Well, I know. That's going to be half the fun, I think.
Yeah, well, you don't have to do it.
No. It'll be. I just get to hear it like everybody else and insert it into the show.
Yep.
I can't wait. Okay, Sorceress. 1982, produced, written, directed by Jack Hill as Brian Stewart, because he took his name off of this, and
I don't blame him.
Roger Corman puts the actually Brian Stewart is the first names of both of his sons.
So he put somebody else's name on it, but regardless, I can see why he did not want to be associated with this film under his own, his professional name.
Yeah, for sure. It was distributed through New World Pictures, who most of you Marvel Universe fans, if you had seen the Marvel stuff coming out of that time, would probably not be a fan today. Yes. You would have never given them another chance, but even then, they're mildly enjoyable for how terrible they are. Yeah, that first, I mean, Dolph Lundgren Punisher, I think the Captain America with the rubber ears.
Yes, yeah. Matt Salinger. Yeah, the Dolph Lundgren Punisher would have been a great movie if it wasn't a Punisher movie.
Yeah, it's actually not a bad little action movie. Yeah. It's not a Punisher movie, but it's not a bad little action movie.
No, exactly.
Yeah. They did some stuff.
Yeah.
Mediocre was the best you could hope for from New World, but...
unless it was horror. Horror, they did well.
They were pretty good at horror, yeah.
Low budget stuff, right?
That was, yeah, that was specialized. I mean, they are often confused with New Line.
Yeah.
So they took advantage of that a little bit. All right. This movie stars Lee and Lynette Harris, Playboy twins that are, most famous for being in Playboy and being acquitted of tax evasion.
I did not know that. I mean, they. One of them went on to do three more movies, and the other one only did one.
Yeah. Lynette went on to do like a movie called Eye of the Jury. I don't know what that is. But Lee Harris was in Eight Men Out. So,
yeah.
You know, she went on to mildly better things. Roberto Nelson was the villain, Ehrlich. Ooh, Ehrlich. Deadly, deadly Ehrlich.
Ehrlich?
He wasn't. Oh, no, that's not Ehrlich. That's the barbarian dude.
The barbarian dude, yes.
Yes,
the one of royal blood.
Trigon was the villain.
Yes.
Oh, man, I'm blowing it already. Yeah, Robert Nelson, he was still terrible, but yes. Everybody's terrible in this movie.
Yeah, actually, I think Robert Nelson might have been the best performance.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it was good.
No,
but I'm saying it was the best of a
the
bad.
The best
bunch.
Of bad. Yeah. Yeah, the best of the bad. David Milburn, who played Pando, is the only connection we have on this movie to something else we've covered, and that was episode 174. He made an appearance in Slumber Party Massacre.
I knew I recognized him. Yeah. I'm sitting here, I'm watching, and I'm like, I know this guy. I was looking at IMDb. I'm like, I saw his picture. I'm like, I know this guy.
It's going to be tough when you're only making sheep noises under a bunch of makeup.
Yeah, and this is his first film appearance, and he's the one who has probably the longest, like the biggest IMDb. The Mexican actors have
big
catalogs, big right? Catalogs, but yeah, in terms of overall success, I'd say Milburn is probably the most successful.
Yeah, for a domestic audience, yeah. For sure. Bruno Ray was Balder, the stereotyped Viking. They even called him a barbarian, but he looks like a Viking.
Yeah, well, and they
totally want to make him a Viking.
he looked more like a barbarian than a Viking to me.
I actually kind of want to make him like a cutesy, roly-poly Viking.
Well, we'll see where the casting goes for sure.
I mean, he kind of got to play this up some comedy at somewhat, because this is unintentionally funny, this movie.
Well, I don't know if it was unintentional, because some of the dialogue suggests it was supposed to be funny. Like, at some point, especially when the Monkey Men showed up, I'm like, this has to be a parody.
I mean, at times, yes, I think they're trying to be, but it's the stuff that where they're not trying, which is usually hilarious.
Yes, I have to agree.
Yeah, Anna Desaad was Delicia, whose name I don't remember ever being uttered. I assume that was the princess.
It was the princess, yes.
Okay, because I was kind of making assumptions there, because I don't think I ever heard her name uttered, and I'm like, I think this is her. Robert Ballesteros was the villain Trigon. Douglas Sanders was Hanu, which was the angry monkey thing.
Who changed sides because he didn't get to rape the princess.
I'm so sad about not raping the one of the twins.
Yeah, motivation. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, there's crazy shit like that in this movie. Bad Hanu, bad monkey. Tony Stevens was Krakanon.
Krakanon?
Krakanon?
See, and the only other character that I like completely can't tell who's who in this movie half the time because they aren't very good at telling you the people's names.
They weren't, and I think it was really late in the movie, but he was the right-hand man. Okay, that's Trigon.
Okay, that's who I thought that was, yeah.
Yeah, and Martin LaSalle was Crona, and that's pretty much it. I mean, there's a bunch of little minor characters as well, but that's yeah. that's your primary cast.
Yeah, and I didn't cast Crigon or Crona, to be honest with you. I was going to, and then I forgot.
Yeah, I got a bunch done, and then I never got back to it, so I think I didn't do Crona either. Oh, no, I did. I got a Crona. It's a good one, too.
Good. I had meant to, but I got sidetracked, and I forgot to go back and finish it. And I couldn't figure out from the list who the henchman was, who the captain was, because I wanted to cast him because he's actually a pretty important character in the movie.
Well, you know, I had this similar thing with the princess. I'm like, I don't know which character, which actress played that and what the name of the character is, so I just wrote princess on my thing because I'm like, I don't know who that is. All right, well, that's your cast, but I'm sure you're chomping at the bit if you haven't already gone back to listen to Cult Movie A-Go-Go. Here's the trailer.
Out of an age undreamed of. An age of magic and fantasy. An age of swords and sorcery. Comes the magical adventure of a sorceress sworn to conquer the world. And magical women warriors fighting with the skills of the masters. Innocent twins are given the secrets of sorcery and the martial arts to defend their lusty beauty. They seek revenge against the sorcerer and discover one must die.
You don't notice something different? Like that.
Like this? Well...
Beyond imagination and out of the ancient dream world come the two who are one. A sorceress.
Arise, my warriors!
Dungeons, swords, and sorcery. Witches. Danger and desire. Wizards. Evil magic and a battle to control the entire known world. Swords and sorcery. Sorceress.
All right, Sam, you've got an IMDb review here, a user review that we quite enjoyed.
We certainly did. This is a 1-star review, so this is just a sampling of the types of reviews we get. So I'm going to start with this wonderful 1-star review. Gender-confused twins Mira and Mara do something or another as the movie does its best to wedge a tent pike into your soul. I initially purchased this movie, along with two others, in a used bookstore's Our Owner is Dead sale for the hefty price of $1. One must beg the question of whether perhaps I got ripped off. Sorceress is bad. Astronomically bad, but not the kind of bad that we're used to. No, not the mediocre Hollywood bad. It's so bad, it's almost a religious experience.
I like that it's an Our Owner is Dead sale.
I know.
Jesus Christ.
Well, when I read that, that was why I texted you. I read this. I'm like, we have to read this because it is stellar. When you want to talk about bad reviews, that's about the best bad review I've ever heard.
Yeah, absolutely. That.
Because it's funny.
Our owner is dead.
Yes.
I shouldn't laugh at that, but...
No, I mean, it's...
It just kind of adds to the story of watching this bad movie.
Yes, it like really kind of emphasizes how tragic this whole thing really is.
Yes, so let's start with the title. Why is this called Sorceress?
Who knows? Because you've one, got, there's two of them.
Yeah, well, okay, you've got the two twins who've been imbued with the sorcery power of the more heroic Krona, who had saved them from being sacrificed as infants. Okay, Krona was trying to find the firstborn of his kids to sacrifice to his god, Caligara.
Yes. And that was Trigon who was doing that.
Trigon, yeah. Yes. And Trigon... Trigon finds out that he's got twins. Well, fuck. Yeah. Now what? And you'd think all this would be important, because later on he's like, fuck it, you'll do.
Yeah.
So, what?
Yeah.
But anyway, Krona shows up at the last minute, after most of them are dead, to fight off Trigon's men. And this leads to Trigon's first death. Apparently, he's got three lives, like a video game.
Yeah. And they never really explain Trigon at all, right? He's just the bad guy.
No. And he is killed at the end of this movie, but I only counted that as the second death, so... Fuck, he's still going to be back.
Yeah.
We missed a death somewhere. That didn't solve anything. He's just going to be back again.
Yeah, one of the things that needs to be fixed, either his first death we see needs to be his second death, so you could change that if you want to keep that device anyhow, but you have to have some way to bring him back, obviously, right? And that's what that device was. It just didn't, well, I mean, it's a part of a shitty script.
Yeah, you know that sound when Mario dies? That's what should happen when he dies.
If we're going to go the full parody route, then yes.
Part of me wants to.
You know, I was thinking that...
Part of me also thinks this would be an amazing musical. Stage musical.
You know, it kind of would.
Right?
It kind of would.
I mean, I could do without the gratuitous nudity. None of that adds to anything.
Well... It doesn't really, no. I mean, it was supposed to set the world, I guess. I mean, it was obviously an homage to the writer's desire to write porn, right. Which, as he finally got to do. I mean, he finally got to live the dream. Yeah, he finally made it. He finally got to reach his goal. Yeah,
yeah. You know, he went on to do a lot of porn parodies,
which is also evident in this writing that he is kind of a parody writer.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention this because Deathstalker is kind of like the benchmark for bad fantasy films from the 80s. It's one of those
which I think is another Corman thing, wasn't it? I actually didn't. I think Brian Hill directed one of those, or Jack Hill, sorry.
He did not, because Deathstalker was made after this.
Okay, so. Yeah, but yeah, this, what I wound up reading was, because this movie had a $500,000 budget but went on to make $4 million. Which, you know, for the most part, that was direct-to-video. So that's a big success for Corman. So he went on to make a whole bunch of them, most famously the Deathstalker franchise.
Yes, but yeah, I think it's funny that they use Deathstalker as that benchmark.
Yeah.
Like even in some of the other reviews on IMDb, Deathstalker is mentioned as being the one that they compare it to. Mm-hmm. Right? But I think it's interesting that this is the one that predates it. And now that you've mentioned that, kind of inspired the Deathstalker series or the inception of it anyhow.
Yeah, no, they went on to make a lot of low budget fantasy films around this time. I mean, you got to think that everybody was trying to capitalize on Conan at this point. There was tons of this stuff coming out.
Yeah, and there was some good. I mean, and there's some that I hope that we'll cover at some point, like Dragon Slayer.
That's been on our list for quite some time, actually.
Yeah,
it has been. We'll get there.
Yeah.
Someday.
Someday.
Yeah, no, definitely some good ones. And then there's a whole lot of bad, like Deathstalker and Ator the Fighting Eagle. Yeah.
And was it Lion Man or?
Oh, I don't remember that one. I'm not sure if I've seen that one.
They made like at least three of them, I think four.
I'm not sure if I've seen any of those. Yeah. Well, I'll have to look that one up. Maybe I have, but yeah, I think it's
Lion Man.
I don't recall that one at all. But even I, as a kid, I would have gone, oh, that sounds bad. But you know what? I love stuff like this as a kid because, you know, it looked like Conan and it looked like a fantasy film. My dad was kind of okay with it, but then there'd be all those boobies.
Oh, yeah, no, that's, I mean, this is prime 80s jerk-off movie. It really is. I mean, let's face it. I mean, there's a lot of nudity in here and the women are attractive.
Yep.
The rest of the cast is fucking ugly. Every single one of them. Even our handsome hero is more goofy looking than handsome. But
he is almost naked too, but they don't show his wang.
No, but they certainly show his bare ass.
Yeah.
As it's sliding towards a spike to...
He was almost impaled for cheating at dice. Yeah. Apparently that's a really big no-no in this fantasy movie world.
Apparently, yes. Yeah. Yeah. And this is one of those points where they're trying to slip in the humor and where it's like, this is so bad. Like, I'm laughing because it's bad, not because it's funny.
Yeah, exactly. And that's most of the time when I reacted to this movie. It was like, what are you doing? What is this?
my biggest what the fuck moment had to be when the monkey men showed up. Because Pando was bad enough, right?
Pando's
satyr guy.
The satyr was bad enough.
Bad enough. And then you see the monkey men, right? Because there's more than one of them, right? There's just one sort of
one. Well, you only ever see Hanu until later on when Hanu winds up taking Erlich and one of the twins. I don't remember which one. But they look alike, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, there's a bunch of
them.
They
had a 50-50 shot.
Yeah. But the...
Oh yeah, the way they found out was they stuck her face in a fire.
Yeah,
in hot blue coals.
Yeah, and
they were blue, and it didn't burn her. They just kind of wiped her face off
of the ashes. And and I'll admit, I kind of liked that. That was probably the smartest thing they did in this whole movie. Yeah. Was leaving that illusion there that there may be damage until they wiped it off. And that was, as far as like direction goes, I think that's the best part of direction in the whole movie. Because it does leave you some sense of illusion for just a brief moment.
Yeah, the twins are somewhat magical as well because they are imbued with magical abilities and martial arts from Krona.
Really, really bad martial arts.
Yeah, although I did like the cut scene where somebody fires an arrow at one of them and she just plucks it out of the air and uses it to fire back. It's just so effortlessly. They cut it really well.
They
it was
did.
About the only thing that they did really well.
Yeah, there's these few moments where you can see that there was a talent there.
Yeah.
It's just some though, not very much.
No, we're trying to find something.
Yeah, most of the action sequences are just brutally bad. Like, the choreography's bad. The actors have no idea what the fuck they're doing.
No.
There's a few moments there where, like you said, they cut just right and where they edit it really, really well.
Yeah.
To give you that sense that they're skilled.
Yeah.
But everything else undoes it.
Like, no, these girls are very top-heavy and don't do the martial arts particularly well.
There's no athleticism about either of them.
No.
And they're supposed to be imbued with magic, and the only magic they really display is that psychic connection that they play up to pornographic effect later on.
Yeah, there's only the one time. Like, this is something that they could probably use to track down one another, and the only time we actually see that connection is when she's getting laid.
Yeah,
and and her sister's having the orgasm while everybody watches.
Yes,
it would have been funny if it didn't piss me off so much, because the Balder guy, who already knew Erlich from before, says, "Oh, I think that's Erlich," and then looks like she's climaxing, and then it starts again. Oh, that's definitely Erlich. I'm like, well, wait, whoa, whoa, whoa. When were you sharing this experience with Erlich?
Yeah, that would raise some questions as well for me, yeah.
How close are you with Erlich? Why do you know this? Then again, I mean, there's a big chase thing after the dice scenario when Erlich joins up with everybody where he's getting chased through a bunch of fuck tents.
Yes, because he's in a whorehouse, right, when he's playing dice, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, they established he considered himself a bit of a player, ladies man kind of thing. Right. And there's so much that doesn't make fucking sense in this movie, right? I mean, they talk about him being of royal blood and stuff like that, and that's a motivator later on in the movie.
Yeah, so even though they're going to sacrifice one of the twins to the god, but apparently you get a better effect if it's laid by somebody of pure blood, of royal blood. Okay.
Yeah, somehow it makes it even more powerful.
They just keep throwing shit at you at the last minute. It's like last minute rewrites. I'm like, hey, what if he's a royal blood and that does something potent to the magic? Okay. What does that mean? So if she's been impregnated and has royal sperm running around before she's killed, that does a little extra oomph.
Yeah, does it give Tragen more power? Like,
none of it makes sense. And then in the end, it's like, yeah, you'll do. And it still resurrects the god that he wanted. Like, is he trying to get more power? Like, what is the purpose of this resurrection of this weird god anyway?
Exactly. Like, there's no... Well, they kind of explain that it's going to give him the power to raise an army that will allow him to take over the world. And they kind of get that. Like I said, there's lots of this that other movies have taken and done really well. I was watching something. This is Willow. This is Willow. This is Willow. right? Like, there's a lot of stuff in here that is Willow, right? So it's like Lucas saw it and went, I can make a better movie out of this. Like, Willow is actually
everybody a remake. Everybody can make a better movie out of this.
But it felt like a mushroom is going...
I feel like we're just kicking somebody while they're down when we get to remake this thing.
Yeah.
Like, this is just too easy.
It is almost too easy, right? But I'm not sure if you got made those same connections, right? But you've got the
I didn't actually see the connections to Willow, but maybe it's just I'm too distanced from having seen Willow last. But I certainly recognized the tropes when I saw them.
Yeah, and that's more what I mean is you have this important child, right? It just in this movie they're adults, whereas Alora Dan.
Yeah, no, there's always Willow's, the prophesied one, right?
Yeah, she's still an infant. But then you have the heroes who are trying to rescue her. You've got the reluctant hero, because you had Mad Mardigan in Willow, and you have Ehrlich in this.
You're right, who didn't initially want to join.
That's right. So you have these there are tropes, right?
Yeah.
But you see them far easier, more effectively in something like Willow. Right?
Yeah.
But it's essentially the same story, except you have a wicked witch instead of a mad king.
Yeah. Maybe we should have called Willow Sorceress, because when I asked why is this movie called Sorceress, we have two sorcerers. The girls are imbued with some magical abilities, but we never actually see them perform magic. And then the princess, who I get the feeling can do magic, but doesn't.
Yeah.
Not really. She does some readings here and there and commands armies. And
yeah. Unless the sorceress is supposed to be the Caligara.
Caligara,
character.
Yeah.
But again, she's
the floaty half lizard head thing.
Yeah. And
witch head.
With no dialogue.
No.
Right.
I would just spits lasers.
Yes.
Yeah. These are real sentences coming out of my mouth, people. About a real movie that exists.
Yeah.
And let us not forget the lion with the bat wings, which I guess was supposed to be a manticore, or maybe?
Maybe, yeah. Something along those lines. Certainly inspired by
certainly
it.
Certainly a hand puppet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
So they
just, sorry, I'm crying a little bit right now.
This was also another magical being, because when Crona did the whole Obi-Wan sacrifice thing, I don't really have to walk into fire, but I'm going to because I'm not needed in the rest of the movie. But imbues the twins with a secret word, which was Vital. And sorry, apparently... And it's a good thing they didn't say it until they needed it, because it would have been really embarrassing if this thing showed up and, like, hey, what the fuck?
Yeah. You don't need me.
You don't need me. Right.
But all that thing did was fucking float there until the last moment, then they fired electricity at Caligara and she disappeared.
Yeah, which I don't know, like, it let Caligara fire down on...
To allow the army of the dead to come up from the underground. Just so fucking bad.
Yeah, it had zombies.
It did have zombies, which were probably the best effect in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, they were clearly just rubber masks, but that was probably the best, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not saying they were good.
Actually, when they were all covered with dust and stuff and just kind of looking like corpses in the catacombs, that actually looked really good. But once they kind of popped out, I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's... You were much better when you were motionless.
This whole movie would have been better motionless.
The best part of this movie is that fully painted poster.
Yes. Yeah, it really is.
Corman sure had somebody good on the payroll to do these posters. Posters up for him. The Death Stalker poster is pretty awesome. And I can think of a bunch of them. They had good posters.
They had very good posters because they were designed to draw in people like us, especially me, being a teenager right as these were becoming popular.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I'm sorry, I'm not going to lie. When you're 13 years old, you're looking for stuff for the Spank Bank, and this is prime material. Prime material, because it's... Boobies, boobies, boobies.
Now let's get on to the twins' gender identity issues. Now, the kids, when they are rescued by Crona, are left with this family, and because he wants to keep them hidden, because Trigon's looking for twin girls, or girl children, quote unquote. Yeah. What the fuck? Girl children.
Well, it's just they're trying to show the misogyny of the age.
Yeah.
Right? It's awful.
So, Trigon's looking for twin girls. So... He says, like, disguise them as boys.
You must raise them as boys.
Which you would think even when they hit maturity or something, like, they could tell the difference between their surrogate mother and father.
Yeah,
and probably use those terms. but never learned what men and women actually are, and didn't realize that they were different from the father.
It was so clumsy.
And then they weren't exactly disguised as boys. They had toques. I guess the toques were supposed to...
And the shorter hair
were supposed to make them look like boys, but they were rather buxom, and that was not well hidden.
No, there's no way you could hide that.
No.
Yeah, I mean, they had a stepsister, I guess is the best way of putting it, and a mother, you're right. And it's like, I'm sorry, but when you live in that kind of culture and community, there's no way they didn't see their surrogate father's penis. No way. They lived in a small cabin.
Well, that's probably true, but...
I mean...
At least in this movie.
In that kind of culture, that kind of body modesty, I mean, it's really unbelievable that they would have never sort of made that connection.
Yeah. And, you know, by the end of the movie, it's clear that they're attracted to men.
To a man.
Ehrlich rolled credit, but I was pretty sure he was getting a threesome out of that. He's living the dream, man. Twins.
I mean, the last line of the movie is these two are one. Right? I mean,
they kept saying that through the whole movie, the two that are one.
Exactly. And that was probably the fact that they used that as the final line of the movie, as they all laugh. Right? I mean, it was set up to that so that he could
could have a threesome joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm getting lucky.
Yeah, they were justifying the polygamy somehow. Yeah. Yeah.
As a twin, I can say that has never happened. I don't feel what my brother's doing. That's fine. I don't want to know.
I'm sure, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, realistically, the last person you want to have a threesome with is a sibling.
Right?
Right. I mean, that's just, ew. Yeah. How many gross out noises can I make? Fuck.
Hey, some people are going, don't knock it till you try it.
And you know, if that's your boat, float it. But yeah, personally, yeah, yuck. There we go, another gross out noise. We haven't talked about Pando hardly at all. We mentioned Pando.
Yeah, who's just kind of a horny voyeur at the beginning of the movie. I don't think he ever stops being.
No, because when the one twin is having the orgasmic experience.
He wants to get in there.
Yeah, he's like, hey, I'm going to take advantage of
this. I'm going to hit it.
This great temper tantrum, which was actually kind of funny. Inappropriate and really, really bad, but funny.
I'm sure she would have been fine with it at the time because she was right into it. But, no. I mean, that's consent. Consent is important.
Yes, taking advantage of a situation like that is rape.
Yeah. The fact that it was icky enough that you're standing around watching her having an orgasm.
Yes. Yeah, and this is all gone, by the way.
Oh, fuck yeah.
All gone.
All gone. This will not be in our remake at all.
No, we'll find a different way to have them share feelings.
No, I think the psychic powers can be used to
better effect,
in much better ways.
Yeah.
You could have that moment of comedy if you want.
But it doesn't need to be as long drawn out.
No, it doesn't have to be as drawn out and just... Understated is better.
Understated is much better. Right? I mean, the Pando character.
The audience knows what's happening.
Yeah.
We don't need to see her climax several times.
No, we really don't.
Way to go, Ehrlich.
Yeah. I mean, go back to the Pando character, who really is. He's in this movie as the eyes of the team, right? Because he's the one who basically sees everything and then makes other things happen.
Yeah, you know, yeah, he tends to be in the background. It's funny that nobody really gives him a side glance, despite the fact he's a satyr and there aren't any others around.
Exactly.
But he seems to easily remain hidden in the shadows. And when the sword is found, because apparently the sword is kind of rare Baldur's, because he's Baldur's sidekick.
Yeah. Yeah, it's steel instead of bronze.
Like, yeah.
Right? And unless you know anything about sort of the bronze and the steel and the Iron Ages, that makes no fucking sense.
Yeah.
None whatsoever.
Well, they tried to explain it a little bit about the process of
which was interesting. They tried to do that in this piece of shit movie. But again, unless you're kind of familiar with it, it still doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, if it was just an ornate sword that is found and brought back to Pando, that would have been fine. Yeah.
You know what, if you're dealing with magic, make it a fucking magic sword.
Yeah.
Make it actually magic.
Yeah. I don't even think it was a magic sword. He just realized, okay, the sword's been found. My buddy's in trouble, and he gathers the villagers who, at this point, weren't rebellious. Like, we didn't really see their discontent in any way.
No, and how does he rile them up when he doesn't speak?
Yes, when all he does is go, bah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I will have to give David Milburn credit, because for such a shittily dressed-up character, poorly written character, he did everything he could with it.
Oh, boy.
Right? I mean, his movements were actually really good. I mean, I think he would have made a really great sort of Doug Jones-type actor where he was doing physical acting, because he did bring a lot of presence to that role, given that he had no dialogue.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he did the best he could with a bad bunch.
Yeah, that was kind of an on-the-nose name with Pando. Like, just take the word pand and
add a dough to the end.
And a dough.
Way to go, Homer.
Dough. But it's not the only one. I mean, you got Balder, and they dress a dude up looking like a Viking.
Yes.
Balder the Brave. That might be a little under the radar for some people, but that was an actual Norse mythology character, even though they spelt it wrong.
Yes, but because they're not actually like taking them right out. They're trying to change them just enough to make you think it's new.
Yeah. There's actually a character called Dragon in here, but I don't remember who he was. So
there were so many characters. I mean, there's the prostitute who, she has a name, but she has no dialogue.
Yeah.
She has a little bit of dialogue early in the movie.
Like, I want to say that was Canty.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, she's there again. She's just to betray Erlik and the twins, right?
Oh, she's the cantina character that brings the stormtroopers back.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly her, yes.
Because it really is. She's just looking for a payout.
Yeah. And I will say that I really did like the masks for the soldiers. Because they were actually
kind of bird-like.
Yeah.
They did look somewhat like a religious cult, like this at least appeared to be.
Yeah. So not everything in this movie was done poorly.
Mm-hmm.
Just about everything. But there were a few things that were done well.
And I think that was taken from the snake cult that was in Conan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. But, I mean, if they're a bird cult, then maybe the thing they're rising should be bird-like?
Instead of just a floating head?
Scarred floating head.
Yeah, I mean, and those are things that we can correct. That's the beauty of doing what we do, is we get to fix these things that don't make sense.
Yeah, I had some thoughts about Pandu, because he ran around with the flutes of Pan, but really only just ever played music. And I was thinking, like, if we didn't establish the discontent of the town, even though we've established that there are rebels, and Trigon, if he doesn't like you, he's just going to call you a rebel and then impale your butt.
Yeah. And we need to establish his motivations really well.
Yeah, but if Pan can't speak to anybody but wants to get a rise out of people who are maybe already feeling discontent using the pan flute, much like the fairy tale of
Pied Piper,
using that to kind of charm people into action.
Well,
using that as a form of communication.
I was just going to say, I think I like where you're going with that is he doesn't speak, but he can communicate through the pipes, as he can convey his meaning, his intent, and get messages through, even if it's not they're understanding words, but they understand what he's trying to communicate.
Yeah, there's some sort of magic to the flute that where people can understand what he's trying to do, what he's trying to say with the flute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. I think that would, again, we need more positive magic in this movie, because all the magic in the movie is really kind of the evil magic, and there's not very much of that either.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine that Krona imbues magic onto the twins, but as a protective magic, maybe we should see that protective magic, but we don't see them wield it in any kind of way, and nor is there a way for them to learn it.
I had a thought on that, right? When he first hands them over, he imbues them with fighting prowess of one person and then his own sorcery power. They're twins. Mm-hmm. Right? So one gets the fighting power, one gets the magic.
I agree with. Yeah. I don't know why they didn't do that.
I don't know either.
And, ooh, here's a thought. And then there's maybe something extra potent if they're actually making contact with each other, like they grasp hands and they get some sort of
Wonder Pin twin powers activate?
Yeah. I need to pull from Super Friends.
Yeah, there we go. And I have a thought for the end, I'll wait till we get there, but I have an idea. And you may like it or you may fucking hate it. I don't know. I don't care. I'm going to say it anyhow.
to be honest, in this movie, everything's a game at this point.
Well, I'm going to play with part of the precept that they set through the original movie. Here, I'll say it right now because it doesn't really matter where I say it. Is they are really one. And part of that final battle is them recombining into a single magical being.
Well, right?
And becoming the sorceress.
There's a thought, but I mean, identical twins are twins born from the same egg that splits into two. So, yeah, that's the same genetic material. So they're twins. They're born at the same time. So there's already a fundamental flaw of him trying to figure out which one popped out of the uterus first.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter because they were seconds apart. It just, the race to the door, only one can fit at a time.
Yes. Right? And that's the whole firstborn thing too, right? Yeah. And that's what I'm saying is his whole concept is wrong.
Yeah.
And he doesn't realize it.
He should have grabbed them both and just sacrificed them both at the same time. Like, then at least he's going to get it right. Regardless,
exactly.
If anything,
and he might get a double whammy because it's twins.
And if he only does one, then he's probably only getting half the spell.
Well, and it comes right back to sort of what I was suggesting there is where they do actually genuinely become one.
Yeah,
right. Gets rid of the creepy polygamy at the end too.
It does kind of remind me of the Dark Crystal ending when the two races join together.
It does a little bit, and there's nothing wrong with using something similar to that, right?
Yeah.
Especially considering we're taking a bad movie and just making it less bad.
Yeah.
Because there's no way we can make the movie good.
No. I mean, I guess there's a thought where this person could become into... Ooh. How can we tie that to the magical word?
Yeah.
Shazam!
Yeah, we're changing the magical word, but Vital is...
It's dumb.
It's dumb, yeah.
I think that's just the shampoo they were using at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's there's lots like the end. I mean, you have to build up to that ending. I mean, but that ending has to make some sort of sense, right? And it doesn't as it stands right now. But yeah, I think that you could have
them summoning up the god being with the magical word doesn't. I hated that.
No, I mean, it's summoning up the god works, but it has to have some sort of meaning.
I kind of like the fact, like, okay, if Trigon is somewhat successful in raising his god, and maybe that's he does make a last minute sacrifice to raise his god, but can't control it because this isn't the prophecy that is being fulfilled. So this is an angry god shooting at everybody. You're all gonna die in my name. Screw y'all.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good way to go with that.
And the only way to defeat this is if the two do become one.
Yeah, and then you have this climactic battle between the sorceress and this goddess.
Yeah, and this is the only way to fully access their power together, because it's all been split up. It's,
And you can even set up a bit of a device or a bit of dialogue at the beginning where Cronus hints that he's actually responsible for them being twins, that he actually separated that single cell and while she was gestating, that he actually separated them into the magical and the physical. Ooh, I like that. Sorry, I'm just thinking of like just the phrasing, even the magical and the physical. I'm bragging.
Yeah, we could have the Caligari god rise, and you wanted my power, but this isn't the prophecy being fulfilled. Yeah. I will give you my power. I will give you all of me, and uses Trigon as a host body.
Yeah, yeah, I like that. Yeah, the whole idea of
your world is mine now.
Yeah. Yeah, and his defeat becomes, I love the fact that he gets kind of like squashed like a bug that way.
Yeah. Right?
Like where he gets completely subsumed by the goddess that he was trying to have give him power instead.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's an irony there that I really like, actually.
Yeah, because, again, the movie's called Sorceress and there's no sorceress. Yeah. So
this fixes that.
This female being. So now this is the real... This is the real threat, the real entity that the final battle where everybody kind of has to join together. I mean, you got the twins becoming the more powerful with Krona, but it's only up to a certain level. I mean, there is the prophecy building that they're pretty powerful, but you also have this gang of characters that still need to do something during this combat as well.
Yeah, and Baldur
can take a Kirkanon.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and Erlik, again, can play up that sort of heroic character as well, right? I mean, because they kind of...
Personally, I think he should die.
It could be the heroic sacrifice.
Yeah, I think that's what kind of pushes the twins into action and this realization. I mean, they've lost their biological parents.
They've lost their surrogate parents.
And now they've lost somebody they've gotten attached to or
fallen in love with.
So, I mean, not to say we couldn't have some cheesy resurrection, but I don't really want to do that. I like cinematic deaths.
You need some tragedy to make this work, right?
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing is there's tragedy in this movie, but it's weak tragedy because they don't convey any emotional value to it.
Yeah.
Right? Even the death of that surrogate family, because of the way it happens and the fact they never really establish that there's a real connection between the surrogate family and them, aside from the fact that they're the surrogate family. They tell you. They don't show you anything. And I would like to see the first part of the movie, right, cut down that opening scene because it's way overdone.
Yeah, right? No, that didn't and need then, to be more than a couple of minutes.
And you know what? I hate montages for this kind of thing, but it's also really necessary in this kind of situation, is have them growing up. Show them learning how to fight and show Cronus showing up once in a while to teach the magic.
And being part of the community, too. We need to see that connection to the people that surround them and the community they live in and what that kingdom has done to this community and the oppression that is happening. Because they're looking for the twins and they're like, hey, we know you've got them, but we'll just make you rebels and we'll take what you have anyway. I get the feeling they're just completely, these guys are completely using everybody in this town.
Yeah. I think to a certain extent, I think the idea of them being raised as boys, I think the gender identity issue can be dealt with in a different way.
Sure.
Right. Because we know that Trigon's not coming back until a certain date and time.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I would have had them raised apart. And then we have the characters come together, not even realize, like, this vague memory of each other. And that's where we can play with the connections between the two.
That could work.
Because if they're looking for a pair that aren't together, then they don't know what they're looking for.
Well, and
they just see this girl and this girl.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless it's the same two people who realize that these two look the same.
Yeah.
And you keep them miles apart.
Well, and that's actually a really good way of handling it. I can see that would make more sense for Cronus to separate them.
Yeah.
And I just said Cronus, just for the record, not Cronus. speech impediments, gotta love them.
Crona.
See, I don't even get it right even when I corrected myself. But yeah, I think that works, though. I think that works better because that would make sense because Crona is the wise man, right? And he wouldn't go, well, you have to raise them as boys because at some point they're going to figure out that they're not like other boys.
Yeah.
Right?
So now you have this magical character and this more warrior-orientated one, and there's something
drawing them away from home. And you have them raised by those types. You have the one that's got the warrior soul or the warrior portion of the soul being raised by somebody who can teach.
Yeah, and you don't even have to have them leave their surrogate parents.
No.
Maybe you can have one set murdered and the other one feeling the sorrow from that and not realizing why they feel that way.
Well, yeah, and then you use Crona to to act as their guidance, right? Because he doesn't have to fucking worry about Trigon for 20 years.
Yeah.
He's got all the time in the world
to
make sure that they are prepared.
Yeah. You can go back and forth and...
Yeah, and be sort of this kindly uncle grandfatherly type who provides them with...
Uncle Ben. If they're going to keep stealing from Star Wars, why stop there?
Exactly. Why not? Right? But yeah, he's engaged, right? Like because that was the whole trope. I'll drop you off to be raised by somebody else and then I'll show up right when you need me to impart my wisdom but teach you nothing.
Yes.
I mean, at least Obi-Wan taught Luke something, but that's essentially the same kind of trope.
I mean, he could technically, like, if he's this magical being, I would like to see that he's split himself off into two aspects of himself. This is, especially over this amount of time, is a big power drain for him while raising these people. And he's already imbued them with power, protective power.
So he's weakened,
as children.
Yeah.
So he's already weakened, and then he's split off his aspects to raise these kids and teach their abilities as an uncle or some...
Well, I like the idea of him being a visitor, but I like the idea of keeping that duality there too. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, just keep that theme of duality all the way through the movie.
Yeah, so when we get a chance to reform him, like, it's just it's taken everything out of him, and then he does fade away. He does fall into ash or whatever because it's too much.
Yeah, and that's that he can say
this is the sacrifice he's made.
Exactly,
to protect these kids.
And with his fading, like the last bits of power that he has that he shared with them goes to them and makes them that much stronger.
Yeah,
not a lot, obviously, because he's
I'm not sure where that's going to happen, because if we're going to have this hero's journey where the twins don't meet up until later instead of early.
And that could be the moment, is right when they come together, right? And that could be exactly it, is they're coming together.
Yeah, but he's actually traveling with both groups. So say Mira's with Balder and Mara is with Erlik. You've got those two separate groups being drawn to this kingdom.
Yeah, and then when they finally meet, it's almost like a paradox, right? Mm-hmm. Where when they finally meet, it's also signals the end of Krona.
Yeah, and we've got to have Tragon at some point, because his men aren't having any success finding it, so we got to use these other means, these magical means, to find the kids. And they are his kids. They are his children, biologically.
I like the idea of father against child continuing through this, right?
Yeah, he's Vader.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, like I'm just realizing, because I compared, I said Lucas stole from this, but Lucas, they stole from him first.
Yeah, so he was just stealing it back.
Yes.
It's like, okay, you stole from me, I'm going to steal your shit that make it better.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you did there. Just give me a second. Hold my beer.
I would love for that to be true.
So would I.
Yeah, hold my beer, bitch. This is how it's done.
Yeah, and Willow, such a criminally underrated Lucasfilm.
Yeah, so, so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. But no, I like where you're going with the idea. Like I said, I like the duality, and I would like to fit that in somewhere on the other side as well. There needs to be some sort of duality there. I think that you possibly even make Delicia and Tragon twins. Right? Again, you get that duality, so the male and female aspect instead.
Because I got the feeling she was another daughter?
I'm not sure what she was. They never explained her, because she just showed up at his rebirth.
Yeah.
Right? There was no, again, no backstory for any of the characters in this.
A sister would make certain kind of sense, because then at least if it has to be a biological offspring he's sacrificing, because it's supposed to be his firstborn that he's sacrificing.
And then that would be funny. It's like, I'm going to sacrifice my other blood.
Yeah.
Right? And then you have some really... That would ties things a little bit...
At least there's some sense of why something happened.
Yes.
It wasn't the something he wanted, but something happened.
Yeah, I like the idea of them being a different types of twins, and then explains why he had twins as well, right? Yeah. Because he's...
It runs in the family.
Right? Like, that's like duality all the way through.
Yeah, I like that.
And then again, it does explain why her death would bring forth Caligara, but why she's also be insufficient.
Right.
Right. This is not the blood I needed. This is not the blood I asked for. So I will give you my power, but at a much greater cost. And then, fuck, that's almost good dialogue, too.
That is pretty good dialogue. Maybe it's through those magical means. And so, you know, she's got, the princess has also got sorceress abilities. And maybe between the two of them, they figure out a spell or some sort of magic. Oh, you know what? They can imbue the monkey creatures. We got better effects to work with now. Yeah. But they can imbue Hanu with enough. Well, actually, I don't know if we even need a whole lot, because it is the same genetics. It was like, hey, smell my feet, go find my kids.
Yeah, I see where you're going with that.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably weak. It was a good joke.
It was a good joke, yes. Smell my feet.
But if we could imbue maybe Hanu with some ability so he could go to his people to find the twins that way, and then we get some sort of crazy thing happening there.
I think about Hanu and the monkeys.
And I think Pandu should be what gets everybody together as well.
He's the watcher. I like the idea of the character. Yeah. And I think that he can be executed really, really well. I think that you've hit on something with using the flutes as the way he communicates.
Yeah, I don't actually want to make him Baldur's sidekick. I want to make him Krona's.
Yeah, I mean, it makes more sense.
Yeah.
It makes much more sense to have him.
Because he is a magical being.
Yes. And yeah.
And then in that case, we don't have to split up Krona if we don't want to. But
I like I have issues with it, but at the same time, I like the idea because it keeps that, like I said, I keep going back to that duality thing.
And I will reiterate all the nudity, all of the sexual undertones are gone.
Well, by getting rid of the gender identity issues, you can get rid of all of it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you can have some moments of sexuality without nudity, right? Yeah. I like the idea of Ehrlich being found in a whorehouse. It's fine, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, because he's kind of a Han Solo character.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with having him be kind of scoundrelish.
Yeah,
right. And being sexual. There's nothing wrong with being sexual, but you don't need it to be graphic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the idea of him. Like that's the idea of him being gambling and cheating and getting away with it. Right. Almost.
Yeah, I like him being scoundrelous and maybe hitting on one of them or both of them and those feelings kind of arising. But once she becomes one, she's just above all that. He gets kind of like, eh. But we're killing him off anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, he doesn't.
And that's part of it. We see his heroic change because he doesn't want to help. He's very reluctant. And maybe it is just his need to have his sexual desire for one of them that kind of keeps him on the chain a little bit.
She's ulterior motives, yeah.
Yeah, and Mara or Mira, whichever one, I think it's Mara, is kind of using that to her advantage because she needs him. He's a good fighter.
Yeah, and I like them being smarter and less naive.
Yeah.
And less helpless.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, if they got these abilities, they should. Because we do see them kicking ass a little bit at the beginning, as badly as it's done. But we need to see that actually properly, and we need to see that they're in charge through this whole thing.
I like that, and I do like the moment where I like the idea of bringing them together and then separating them again.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I wasn't crazy about them being drugged and
no,
because it that whole thing also felt really kind of
forced, yeah,
forced and rapey.
Yeah, well, and yeah, it did feel a bit rapey, and also it felt like a cop out. It's like, well, how do we capture them? And I think that using...
It was just like, oh yeah, we're buying into this whole sacrifice thing now. That's great.
Yeah.
Let's do that. No, I didn't buy that at all.
No, it was very...
We should see that struggle to get away all the time.
I could see it being more like they're playing the game until they can figure out a way to get away.
Yeah.
Right. But it didn't feel like that in this in the movie. But you could do it that way, where you get the sense that they're just playing along in order to make sure that they have an opportunity to escape when it arises.
Yeah.
They want them to let their guard down, and it gives them an excuse to get closer.
Yeah. Right? I mean,
to create that romantic interest, because you do need that to a certain extent.
Yeah. And Trigon seems to be give information away pretty freely, so
he's like, arrogant. Hey. I loved his arrogance. I like that. Yeah. That was one thing I liked about that particular character.
So we do kill off one set of parents. You killed my parents. It's like, they weren't your parents. I'm your father.
Yeah,
and
another Star Wars, Luke, I am your father.
Yeah, right? Totally. Yeah. And she can play with that. It's like, oh, okay. Where's my allowance, Dad?
Yeah.
Where's my kingdom? Or, you know, play into her father's wishes and become compliant. And that's what
outwardly compliant, yes.
Yeah, and that's what they are doing in this movie, but they've drugged her to do so.
Yeah, but I think that we make them smart enough that they choose to do it.
Yeah, because
right?
I think to some extent there is a magical protection on them because of what Krona's done. And they're not easily swayed by magics and chemistry.
Yeah, I like, you know, I could almost see sort of setting up this moment. I would love to see,
wouldn't mind to see Ehrlich getting drugged. That would be, because that makes for some, he's almost more comic relief. I think that the people following them are going to be comic relief in a lot of ways.
And that's usually who they are. Like, I mean, when you look, and we keep going back to Star Wars because there's so much of it in here, right? When you look at the Han Solo character, he's kind of comedic in his taciturnness,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, he's not funny because he makes jokes. He's funny because he's so out of place,
mm-hmm.
and he's so reluctant to do things. And I'd like to see Ehrlich do that, and I'd like to see that moment. There's a moment where Lando Calrissian moment, to go back to Star Wars, where he pretends to betray Amara or Mira, whichever one's is
yeah, in because the castle. It's just nothing but profit for him.
Yeah,
but once initially, probably the companions don't even know who they're with. they're drawn in. I would think Balder probably is drawn in because he does know
Cronin.
Actually, he does know Pandu, who he also realizes works for with Crona.
Yeah.
So for him, he's informed and he's helping because he's a good person.
Yeah.
Whereas Erlik, he's being hired. She's throwing money at him and using her wiles to keep him on the line.
Oh, sorry, I have an idea. Kay. So our warrior princess, Balder raised her. Mm. He's the one that Kronos left her with.
Okay.
Right? So he's the one who survives.
Okay.
Right? And then, so he's got that, because that's this whole thing where he's made a promise and a connection to them in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I think that feeds it better, is if he's actually her surrogate father. Like, he's the one who taught her what she knows, mm-hmm. and is her surrogate father.
Yeah, maybe when she's feeling, so when the other twin, her parents are killed, and all these feelings are rushing through her, and she's had this often growing up, but didn't understand it. That's when he has to face it and tell her the truth of who she really is.
Yeah.
And that sparks this journey that he goes willingly with her on. That kind of screws up my casting a bit because I cast a younger person for that part, but that's fine.
It's all fixable.
It's all fixable.
And there's makeup.
Yeah. And meanwhile, you've got the other one who's more vengeance drawn to the same place.
Actually, I was thinking about that, and she's already in that place.
Well, she stays there. I think she's much closer. Yeah, and she's gathering a little bit of help and hires Erlik, who is underhanded. And I think we trade his part with that girl, that cantina girl, essentially. Yeah. Like, he does that. Like, okay, once he sees some of the signs that she's feeling things from somebody else, because it works both ways, the psychic connection, and as they get closer, it gets stronger. And then they'll be able to talk to each other as they get much, much closer. But he's seeing these signs like, wait a minute, I think this is... And once he realizes the story, I'm like, oh, there's some cash to be made here. Yeah, what if I went to Trigon?
Yeah, and maybe you have that moment where he's
the one who betrays her.
Yeah, he's been hired after her parents died by Kronos, or Krona, to act as her
Erlik? Guard.
Yeah.
No, I want him to go through... an emotional cycle. Like, he's an underhanded dick.
Oh, no, I agree. I totally agree.
He's not been hired by Krona or anything else. He's been drawn in by...
Quit cutting me off. I wasn't done.
Okay, well...
Right? Because I was just going with what you went. Because you said something about her hiring him to be...
Yeah.
Yeah, right? So, one way or the other, he gets hired by her, right? Yeah. As a strictly mercenary.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
And I got that far, right? And then he's the one who sees... When the twin comes into town, he's the one who sees her and then makes that connection, right? It's just a simple visual confirmation. It's I know that I know she's back at the tower or wherever she is because that's where she
How'd she get ahead of me?
Yeah, and then he starts making the
clothes.
Yeah, and that's where he makes the connection. He says, "I see what's going on here.
Ah, this is the two that are one."
Yeah, and then that's where he says, "I think I found them to the head henchman or to Trigon himself,
Kirkan." And
and then you could even have a fun moment where you almost where there's that punishment scene.
Yeah,
right. It's like, yeah, well here's your reward, you dick.
Yeah, and it's going to be a spike through the asshole.
Yeah,
I no, well, we'll change that.
But yeah, essentially that's.
But yeah, here's your reward, and it's going to be death. And he's like, well, that stinks.
Yeah,
and so he has to get his ass out of there and change the plot. He's like, okay, I did a shitty thing, and that screwed everybody.
I
have to fix this.
Yes, right, and that's where I was going with that. So.
Yeah, and yeah, that gives him a good character arc.
Yeah, it actually gives him an arc.
Yeah, it gives him a redemption arc, and then,
that makes his death that much more poignant because he's been through the whole cycle.
Exactly. Right?
I was picking up what you were laying down.
Sorry, when you said Krona had hired, I'm like, what?
Well, and I how he gets to be working for her doesn't really matter.
No.
Right?
Yeah, but I just want to keep Krona out of Erlik's life because we already got a character that's several characters that have been drawn in and connected to Krona through some way or another. Like, this guy's been drawn in and has no connection and no idea what the fuck is happening.
Well, and I had something else for him. I wanted to play with the idea of him him having some sort of royal blood still, right? And that's where...
Well, and because that was through that medallion, wasn't it?
So you have that. Because I love the scene where he's picking up his weapons because he's pawned them so to get money to gamble with. I liked that bit.
Yeah.
Right? So he gets his weapons back and they're in shitty condition to begin with. and they kind of established that there, which is what I liked about it. But then when Balladur shows up and they finally connect, Balladur has a sword that he's been carrying around for years, not knowing who it was for. It's like he knows it's not for him. He knows it's not for his warrior girl. Mm. It's for somebody. It's for him.
Well, what if he is the last surviving heir to a kingdom, this kingdom? Like, this is the kingdom that's been thrown over by this bird cult thing that Trigon runs. This kingdom was his kingdom, and he's the last surviving heir.
Yeah, but he doesn't even know it.
Yeah. Like, no, he would have been an infant, right? Yeah. And much like the twins, was raised by somebody else. But the only thing he has, he knows that his parents weren't his parents, and the only thing he has from his former life is that medallion.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, Balladur...
Because, yeah, I mean, that's not one of those things that's thrown into the film. Yeah. Oh, he's got a medallion, he's of royal blood. Yeah. Okay, well, maybe we should have shown us that before, thrown some camera zooms onto that fucking thing to tell us it's important.
And you know what? The symbol on the medallion matches the hilt of the sword.
Right.
And that's what how Balladur makes the connection. He's like, those go together.
Yeah.
This must be for you. Right? And that's why Trigon decides to kill him. Because Erluk doesn't know who he is, but Trigon does. He recognizes the medallion. He's like, oh, this guy's done me a favor, but he's also somebody that is supposed to be dead. Mm-hmm. So we're going to make him dead.
It's like, hey, since we're sacrificing our kid, let's sacrifice this dude too.
Yeah.
Two for one.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, because again, it goes to just the person that Trigon is.
Yeah.
Right? We have to figure out a device to get Erluk out of his execution, though, because in the original movie, his way of getting out of it was to pretend to betray them.
True, yeah. Yeah, if he gets caught... Well, okay, he gets caught with that trying to betray her personal gain, not realizing he hasn't made the realization yet. And boy, that's going to come really late in the movie if we do it this way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is okay. Honestly, he's probably going to have to get rescued.
Yeah, because you know what? They don't know he's betrayed them yet.
They don't. Well, I mean... All they see is this dude tied up with one of the twins, and so it's Balder and Mira and Pando, the army that they've gathered up from the village to come in to disrupt this ceremony from ever happening, because they realize this is going to fuck up everything.
Yeah, that's...
Or do we even do that?
No, I don't know. This is where it gets a little bit tricky, because, I mean, because his betrayal has to come before they meet.
Yeah.
Right? Right, or as they're meeting.
Well, I mean, at that point, he's captured and been betrayed by Trigon anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, is how do we get him out of that situation?
We're gonna have to show that he's kind of capable. Maybe he does have to get away earlier. Yeah. Okay. Well, he's actually not at the sacrifice. We're gonna have to have a dramatic fight scene of him actually being capable as a barbarian. Because let's face it, he is a barbarian.
Yeah.
He should be. Capable.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking he's more of a mercenary than a barbarian.
Well, like Conan was a thief.
Yeah.
Barbarian is just...
A general term for...
General term for an outrider, yeah. Right?
Fair enough. But yeah, he's definitely not, to outward appearances, any type of royal.
Yeah, because he hasn't been raised that way.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe that's when he goes into that betrayal and he betrays them, and then Trigon goes, recognizes the medallion and says, oh, you need to take him, right? He's like, take him, he must be executed. And then he fights his way out of that. Simple, right?
Yeah. Still like the I have your reward. He has this medallion. That's why he does it. He looks at the medallion. We can have this later on, as you know, he's gonna be killed for whatever, and you know, he's like, shows this medallion to his sister that we've made now, and it's like, I thought we killed all of them.
Yeah.
Luck is on our side. This must be, you know, raising Caligula, Caligara, this prophecy is happening because this is meant to be, because they've put the last heir of this kingdom in my hands. Like, another problem solved. And then he hucks the thing over his shoulder.
Yeah, yeah. We have to figure out where that's going to happen, because we were kind of bouncing around a little bit here, and we're actually breaking our own story now.
Well, no, it's actually that happens earlier in the film, so we can have him get away from being killed for... You know, this is the same scene, right? Yeah. Essentially, because he doesn't know who he is either.
No,
No. But then that actually does break the story. If he doesn't have the medallion, and that happens before he meets
Baldur, then
we're going to have that meeting earlier.
No. When he goes to, actually it works when he throws, when instead of throwing the medallion away, he throws it at, like when he gets it away from Erlik somehow, right? He's looking at it and he's like, I thought we killed all of these, and then throws it back at him.
Yeah.
Like, just simple, right?
Yeah.
Right. And then he's like, kill this piece of shit, right? Or this thing, right? And then he fights his way
out. Throw him into the pyre.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah. And then he fights himself, fights his way out and escapes. Simple, right? It shows he's capable. It sets up the scene.
Mm-hmm.
It sets up the medallion.
And it gives him an opportunity to gather his wits, gather others, because now he knows what he's looking for, because he's already seen the other twin once. So he goes to them going, okay, they've got her, they're going to be sacrificing her, I need your help.
But see, and then again, we're breaking the story again, though, because they still have yet to meet.
No, but he's seen them already.
Yeah, but he said, as soon as they've got her,
mm-hmm.
then how do they meet? Until the rest.
Who's they?
Well, you just said he like, goes to the
he, go, he go. He's already seen the twin, so he knows where the other. He knows what he's looking for.
Okay,
and he explains his situation. Like, you have a sister. They already are aware of it.
Okay, they know
because
where she is,
that,
and they're going to
of
take
that connection.
Her. Okay.
Yes. So
now I get it. Okay.
Yeah, he joins up with Baldur and that other group.
Yes, and then. We can
get into that final scene.
Then we get into the moment where they get imbued with the final bits of Cronus's power, get mm-hmm. their final step to becoming the people they're supposed to be.
Yeah, so you get the complicated. We'll have the big action sequence and stuff, and then Erlik gets a lethal blow, and
I like the twins unite. Yeah, and I have no objections to the Army of the Dead. I like actually.
Oh yeah, no, I don't have any. I like that as well.
Yeah, and
because if. Like, I thought the movie was trying to do this, and it didn't do it very well. Like, when they raise Caligari, because they're sneaking in through the catacombs. I still like all that.
Yeah.
And that's where we see the dead. But we see how... Because it's through the chaos that she's only just releasing them. The dead already start to rise. So this should be Trigon's power, raising the dead.
Well, it starts to happen at the start of his ritual.
Yeah, it starts to happen at the start of his ritual, and that's part of the spell, I guess. But when we get into the battle, per se, he can raise his own fallen soldiers, so, along with the ones in the catacombs.
So they are literally undead. So you kill them and they come back.
So that just adds to the threat. Like, they keep coming back.
Yeah, the only thing you can do is
dismember them.
You've got to make them pieces, because that's the only way that you can keep them from causing you harm.
Yeah. It's a gory scene, but you can also have some humor in there as these arms are crawling across the ground.
Yeah, very Night of the Living, not Night of the Living, Return of the Living Dead kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah, Evil Dead.
Yeah. No, I'm fine with that. I think that's because there has to be some humor in it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think we can find plenty of places for that, especially through the psychic connections.
Yeah.
That's going to be the most important part. As the twins get closer, they are communicating with each other and coming up with a plan.
Exactly, I think it feeds the story better that way. If they're they're getting to know each other without having met, and they're both have their strengths, right? One is very analytical, and the other one is very strategic, right? Because they've learned different skill sets, right?
Okay, we know one's the fighter and one's the magician. Which one's the one traveling towards them?
The fighter. Fighter is the one who was raised out in the woods, kind of thing, like out in the sticks, because that's. Makes sense, but you have your learned one, the one who learned magic and stuff like that. She lives in the city. All along she's lived in the city, because that's where you want to be
we need scenes of her doing magic. Like, if she's playing Trigon and joining up with him after learning that he's the father, I'm not sure, because we got to see her doing some magic.
Yeah, we do, and that's where your early sort of.
And I don't want her raising some sort of god that out of nowhere.
No, I don't think that works either. No. But I think that when you're having sort of your montage thing, like I said, she lives in the town because there's libraries and there's access to the things that she needs in order to learn how to do magic. You have her learning, like literally have her learning magic. You have show her learning how to levitate things and how to destroy things with a blast, like whatever you want to do. But you have show. already established that she has magical powers as they grow, and our opposite is learning how to fight, and she's capable.
So we know she could escape this. She's playing the willing victim. We could actually see her magically open up her shackles as the soldiers come in, and her plan all along was to deflect.
Well, and that's the thing, is let's have her volunteer, saying, you know what, I've heard that you've risen, and I know that you're my father. I come to greet you. I am the firstborn. She's even say, you know what, my twin is dead. Right? She can totally set it up, so he has no idea that there's another twin.
Yeah. So even, the twin's still alive. That kind of makes Ehrlich's betrayal moot. But
oh yeah, that's fair enough. So,
but that's still okay, because if he betrays her before she goes,
yeah,
that's fine. And then the soldiers come to take her, and she's like, no, I'm going with you. I'm cool.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I know who you are. I know what this is all about. Yeah. I was coming to you anyway.
Yeah.
Dick.
yeah. No, set it up like that, and yeah. it gives a better reason for her to be there than just them being captured.
Cool. All right. I think we're good there.
I think we fixed it.
I think we did. Let's quickly get into our casting. This should be a little bit of fun. You know what? Before we do casting, there's a 9 out of 10 review.
Yes, let's do that.
Let's do that. Okay, 9 out of 10 review, the best laugh in a long time. So even the good reviews. Okay, you know this wasn't going to be a good movie. The acting, the dialogue, and stunts are terrible compared to the high standards we're used to. But just wait. The last 15 minutes of this movie are such epic gold, I can't even. We laughed so hard we couldn't even breathe. It's like a 5-year-old wrote this script, and every turn it was... # and then this happened. # and then that happened. # and there is a space battle. I love that they use hashtags in a review.
Yes.
IMDb's official grade for this is a 4.2 out of 10.
Which is surprisingly high.
It's surprisingly high. There is no critic rating at Rotten Tomatoes.
I'm not surprised.
But there is an audience score. Can you guess what it is?
You know, I have this sad feeling I'm probably way low, but I'm going to say about 27%.
You were way high.
Really?
7.
7? I got the last number right.
Yes, you did. 7%. 7.
7%. That's more accurate as far as I'm concerned.
I agree.
No, this has the potential.
I think we've only raised it to a 25%.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's not much you can do with this movie, but I think we've done better than 25%.
Oh, you could do a lot better with it. And I think we have.
Yeah.
I think we have.
Yeah, but yeah, just not.
But I'm certainly not going to saddle an A-list cast with this.
No, and mine's not an A-list cast either. I think I've got, well, some almost A's in here.
I've got some recognizable names. I did like the fact that they did cast twins. I mean, with today's technology
I cast twins.
Yeah, you can feasibly cast one person as two people.
Especially the way we've done it, because they're very rarely on the screen together.
Exactly. So take your pick or whatever you want. But I still went with actual twins because there aren't enough cool twin actors out there. So I went with Katie and Carissa Strain.
How about that? So did I.
There you go. We actually did mention them back in our Carrie episode.
And that's where I'm like, I remember those twins from Carrie. I think I'm going to use them. And they're Canadian, so I'm like, I'm always big for supporting our Canadian
exactly.
Family.
So, okay, I kind of thought you might have landed the same way as well, because the twin acting pool is small, and then the ones that actually have any acting abilities are even smaller.
Yes.
So, for my Balder, I went with Nils Jorgen from Norseman and Lilyhammer. Have you watched Norseman? He's the kind of tubbier one.
Yeah,
I thought he'd be kind of fun in that role, but he's a little too young for what we've gone with now. So, well, I'm sure we could come up with something else down the road if we wanted to. But this was before we came up with our plot. For Ehrlich, I went with, because you know what, I like my barbarians to look barbaric, like have actual physique. Maybe not Schwarzenegger physique. Trying to find bodybuilders who can act that aren't 50 is actually pretty tough. So I went with Dustin Clare. He played Spartacus, or he played Gannicus in the Spartacus TV show, and he's also currently on Glitch. although he's probably in his 40s as well. But he looks good.
But yeah, and you know, there's nothing to say that, especially given what we do with him, there's nothing to say that he has to be younger. I think for him to be as skilled as he should be older.
Yeah, and I think for Hanu, Pando, those type of characters, they're going to be mocap characters. Yeah. Obviously, a lot of...
Oh, Doug Jones is doing all of it.
Well, you got Doug Jones and I got Terry Notary, because I think I went with more of a CG rendered look rather than the Doug Jones costuming and stuff, which I really like now that you say it, because you went Pan's Labyrinth. I think that's awesome. For Trigon, I went with Ed Skrein from Alita Battle Angel, Deadpool. Most recently Deadpool, and a Netflix movie I just watched called Tau.
Oh yeah, he was so good in that.
He was, absolutely. So I think he'd be a really great bad guy. He's proven to be a very great bad guy. For Kirkanen, I went with a different way because, I mean, if you got one of the twins as a martial artist, I wanted somebody to be physically an equal. So I went with Daniel Wu from Into the Badlands and Tomb Raider.
Oh, there you go. And I've got mine now, too.
Okay, awesome. For my Crona, because I want him to be more of an elderly Merlin type of character, but kind of gruff because he does kind of hand people's asses to them. I went with Scott Glenn. You can see him currently in Castle Rock and Daredevil on
he's
Netflix.
Good. Right. And actually, I had thought of my
Crona. He's old, but he's good.
Yeah, I thought of my Crona actually while we were talking, and I do have a Crona and a whatever the head captain's name is.
Cool. For the Princess Delicia, who we've now made the sister, I went with Abby Lee from Neon Demons, but it doesn't quite match up age-wise right now, but because we made them twins as well. But yeah. That's my cast. I think I did all right.
I think you did do all right. Who's your director?
My director. This whole thing screams Robert Rodriguez.
I like where you went with that. I went a slightly different direction, but I think you'll like it too.
He's been itching to do a fantasy piece, and this has all those little grindhousey aspects that I think he'd enjoy if he wanted to keep some of that intact and still make it work. He's kind of the guy who could do it.
Yeah, I think you're going to like my director, but yeah, I like where you went with that.
Okay. All right, what do you got for us?
So we already know who my Mira and Mara are, because they're the same ones that Jay went with, Carissa and Katie Strain. For my Ehrlich, I'm with Joel Kinnaman, again, because he's a big guy. He's not really muscular, but he's big.
Yeah, no, I like that choice. Yeah. I actually thought about him at one point.
Yeah. For my Balladar, I'm with Common. He's of the right age. He can with that beard, when he gets that beard.
Balladar?
Sorry, I've got a little dot.
No,
there.
That's Balladar. I like that name.
There it is, Balladar. It is. But yeah, he's another big guy. When he gets his beard going, he looks barbaric.
Right.
I'm sorry, Moorish more than Viking.
That's
fine. Yeah, but and he's old, the right age to be a mentor as well.
Right.
For my Delicia, I went with her name's Deechan Lachman.
Delicia. I feel like we need to change that.
Yeah, well, the names.
Somebody got some pizza from Safeway. Yeah.
The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Right.
But yeah, she was actually with Joel Kinnaman in Altered Carbon. She's I'm okay with her being a little bit older than Trigon, because he's been dead for 20 years.
Oh, that's true. She's aging, and he's on life number two.
Yeah, exactly. So
he's waiting for the reset.
I took that into account.
Right. Oh, that's cool. So you could easily have an age difference.
Yeah, and I mean, the age difference is only about...
Despite being twins. Oh, I like that. Timey-wimey.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
I was thinking about that even before we knew they're twins. Because if she'd been a servant before, she would have been of an age, right?
Yeah.
The age difference isn't quite enough, but it's close enough for me. For my Trigon, I went with Shiloh Fernandez from Evil Dead.
Okay.
Right, because I wanted both of them to have a sort of a dark, exotic look, and they both look exotic. They don't look like siblings, but that's okay. But they both have a sort of an exotic look, and he is younger enough that we could get away with it.
Cool.
For my captain, I'm going with Mark Dacascos.
Yes, right? I like him.
Yes, I like him very much, and it's funny, as you were saying yours, I was thinking martial artist, and I'm like, he's still one of my favorite martial arts actors. I love him, even though he doesn't do much anymore. I think he would have made a great Crow, by the way. He did make a great Crow.
I was about to say, I'm like, he did?
He did. That's why it popped into my head.
He's also a fantastic chairman for the Iron Chef.
Yes, he is. And then for my Crona, I'm like Tommy Lee Jones. I want surly, surly, surly.
Yeah. So, yeah, we went similar vibe. Yeah.
And I want them to be old. Yeah. Right? And I think that's a really great way of doing it, is just cast old.
Yeah, cast old.
Yeah. And then for my director.
We saw how badly they did old makeup.
Yes, we did. And I mean, they're both still working, so why not?
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
For my director, I went with Neil Marshall. I know you love him.
I do indeed.
Because he did The Descent, Dog Soldiers. Right, and you want to talk about horror comedy or action comedy? That's a great
one. And he's directed a lot of Game of Thrones episodes.
That was the other reason I went with him.
Yeah.
Is because he does fantasy, and he can do gore, and he can do comedy.
He can do all of it.
He can do all of it, and that's why I went with him.
Yeah. Excellent choices. I think we both got stellar casting there.
I think, yeah, it worked out really well, even considering we had no idea what we're doing with this movie.
No. I had some loose strings, but not much.
Yeah. And that's about all I had. Like I said, I didn't know which way we were going. I'm like, I think we can either go outright parody.
And you absolutely could. Yeah, I mean, this movie certainly deserves it if you wanted to.
Yeah. It deserves to be taken the direction it was going unintentionally.
Yeah.
But we're not as good at comedy as we are at action, so we went that way. Let's face it, we're better at making things.
We like to make things badass.
Yeah, yeah. And parodies, neither of us really likes parody, so it's hard for us to think in that direction.
Yeah. I can enjoy a good parody once in a while, but Jesus, most of them are fairly nauseating. So,
yeah, they're,
to me,
they're
I like the Naked Gun movies, and the first couple scary movies are.
Yeah, and the airplane movies, like the old Zucker Brothers stuff, is fun.
Yeah, right. So I mean, we've done Airplanes, so it's not like we don't appreciate it. But
no, it's just,
we're not good at writing it.
No, we're definitely not good at writing it. We're not good at non sequitur jokes, right? And that's what that stuff really is, and that's why the Zucker Brothers were so good.
Seth MacFarlane would have a field day with this.
Yeah, he would. alternate director,
Seth
with
MacFarlane.
The same cast, I would love to see Seth MacFarlane, because in Million Dollar Day to Die in the West, his cast was all serious actors, and they did a great job.
And they did a great job, and I really loved how the non-sequiturs worked in that movie.
Yeah. So he
could have a field day with this.
Yeah, so he's our alternate director for the parody version.
Yeah,
With either one of our casts.
Yeah.
Or any mix of our cast.
Yep.
Go for it, Seth.
I think you have a lot of fun with this. All right. Well, this is already longer than the movie we're talking about, so I'm going to close this out and not subject you to any more Sorceress. Oh, my Lord. We're paying a price for this one.
Yes, we are.
If you like bad movies, you're going to love a lot of stuff in our library, and tell your friends who like that kind of thing as well. Dive through our archives and find us in a ton of different places. Our full archives are available on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play Music, Radio Public, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Blueberry, and most of it's even on
freaking YouTube,
but not all of it, so you'll have to check it out. But full libraries on all those other podcast providers, and make sure you tell your friends where to find us on our social media. We are at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com, where you can email us your suggestions, your corrections, your comments, and your fan challenges. And this feels very much like a fan challenge that we didn't actually get.
No, this was just, like I said, this is our Easter present. It was an Easter egg in our cult movie trailer go-go episode.
It is.
And we felt it was appropriate to do it now.
Yes, Easter egg, Easter episode. I don't know. It works. It works in our heads.
Yeah. I'm sure it works in yours too. Right?
There you go. But yeah, I had a lot of fun putting together the cult movie trailer go-go. So if you want to hear more craziness that could turn into potential episodes, go dive into that, and it might give you some insight into the future, or might not. It's a fun episode regardless. Yeah. I had fun putting it together, and that's going to be our New Year's tradition, I hope, down the road. So
we'll keep
going forward.
Yeah, going forward.
Yeah.
Just before we go, just a shout out to our friends Dave and Nick at Super Movie Brothers. They've been shouting out some support to us lately, and I just want to reciprocate because they're wonderful. They're a great podcast. Please give them a shout out. They don't have a promo right now, so I'm just going to give them one right now. Right. And it's a shitty promo that I'm giving, but they're great guys.
Their episodes are a whole lot better than this promo.
Yes. Yes, they are. And they're definitely worth listening to. So yeah, go check them out. Also on Twitter. I don't know if they're not on Facebook, but yeah, definitely on Twitter. Just Super Movie Brothers.
And yeah, search them out on your favorite podcast platforms.
For sure.
All right. Well, that is it for Sorceress 1982. Next week, we'll be back with a comparison episode. I've been Jason.
I am always Sam.
And we are out of here.
Well, my lad, isn't one enough for you?
You forget, Baldar. These two are one.